Hey, folks, and welcome to this week's podcast. Mabel John is our guest today. She's 83 years old and still going strong, still really sharp as a tack. This conversation was pre-recorded. It wasn't live, so I had a chance to sort of ask her a bunch of questions, knowing that some wouldn't make it. And that's always a different kind of interview than a completely live one. And in some ways, I like it. It works good with older guests and folks whose histories I'm not as sure of, because then I can sort of find out some things and edit out how, you know, my ignorance or their forgetfulness. So we talked a lot. One of the things I took out was about a 15-minute part where we talked about religion for a while. It was very interesting. I always find that's an interesting topic to talk about, but not always an interesting one to put on the air. But it was interesting. So anyway, she's playing at the Ponderosa Stomp, and that's coming up. So if you've never been to the Ponderosa Stomp, it is a two-night, three-day music festival in New Orleans, and they really go out of their way to find the unsung heroes of American music, and they really do just that. They put together some one-of-a-kind performances, and it's really fun. I highly recommend it. Half the WFMU air staff is usually down in New Orleans. So check out PonderosaStomp.com for information. So one of the things I wasn't sure about after the interview ended, I was doing some more research trying to pick the music, is precisely what Ray Letts' recordings Mabel John played on, and I couldn't really find a definitive source. And I emailed her, and she didn't email me back, which I didn't know what that means. During this interview, you'll hear she gives her email address out freely and asks for listeners to contact her. So you can do that, and maybe you can find out what Ray Letts' songs she played on particularly. Or maybe she's just taking her time getting back to me. Hopefully I'll hear from her, and you will too. Next week, the Pandoras will be live on this program. I'm really looking forward to that. Should be quite interesting, featuring, of course, Kim from the Muffs as their singer now. And they've just sort of gotten back together an all-star lineup of former Pandora's members. So that'll be fun. That's next week. Hope your summer is over. Today's the first day of school here. Just dropped my kid off, and I guess I'm ready for fall. Summer was crazy, but good. Okay, Dr. Mabel John, here is our conversation. There is Looking for a Man from 1961, written and produced by Berry Gordy, and Mabel John joins us. She's the first female artist signed to the Motown Talma label, and she later recorded for Stax and did a whole bunch of things. We're going to talk about all of that. Welcome to the program, Mabel John. Looking for a Man, does that blow your mind? That's 54 years ago.
Oh, yes, that's a few days ago.
Hey, you're young at heart, I guess.
Yes, but I hope that we're all still young at heart.
I hope so. I think music helps keep me young. I bet it does the same for you.
Yes, I call it the sentiment of a man's soul.
Absolutely. You were born in Bastrop, Louisiana, very much in the north part of Louisiana. You moved to Arkansas, and then 1941, your family moved to Detroit, where a lot of people were moving. When you got to Detroit, was there a lot of folks from the south living up there?
You know, I was quite young at that time and still in school. I don't really recall knowing more than two or three families that had come from Arkansas to Detroit.
Was there a lot of music in your house when you were a kid? You moved up to Detroit.
Music was never out of my house. In our home, the radio was on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On Sunday, it was a lot of gospel music and singing on the radio, but every day of my life there was music. My father was singing or he was whistling. There was never a time I remember my father just being still and his mouth not moving. He was either whistling, talking, or singing.
Yeah.
So that's how our family and our household was.
That sounds wonderful. So was it a little bit of everything on the radio?
Well, not as much, not as different as it is today. It was country music, and we grew up listening to country music and listening to my father sing all of the country music songs. He knew them all. And there were a lot of gospel music, but you didn't hear a lot of rock and roll, a lot of blues, because it wasn't as popular at that time. Remember, you know, I've been here a few days, so I'm able to have seen the music change from year to year for years.
Sure. So when was the first time you thought that you started singing and somebody noticed you? When's the first time somebody picked you out and said, Mabel, maybe the singing is something you can do?
Well, that was a long time down the road. My mother took the first five of us children, and she taught us how to sing and sing harmony. And we formed a group that was called, first my father wanted us called the John Family. And after a while, he said, oh, no, I don't want you called the John Family. I'd like for you to take the name the United Five. So we were the United Five. It was myself, my brother Murtis right under me, my brother Haywood right under Murtis, my sister Mildred right under Haywood, and my brother Willie that became, well, William Edward that became Little Willie John. And the five of us, we sang only gospel. That's all we sang.
And when people, I mean, I assume seeing five little kids sing harmony gospel together was, you know, really got the audiences going. Was that a success for you guys?
It was a success for us. We didn't do it for money. We did it for the sheer enjoyment. And we were always singing at home. My father told us when we would have chores to do in the house, he said, you all can never argue or bicker between each other. You're family. So instead of arguing, he'd say, strike up a song. And we would sing all the way through everything we had to do. And we would sing in churches. We would sing on the different musical programs that was called, there were a group of four or five groups, the Mighty Clouds of Joy, the Soldiers, and the Dixie Hummingbirds. Whenever those quartet singers were coming to town to sing, to do a performance, my mother and father put us on those programs with them. And we were children. And, of course, my brother Willie would always take the show.
Did anybody ever record the United Five? Is there some recordings of this?
No. I don't know if it ever even came into anybody's memory. We were just doing it. That's what we did. Music was our life.
So a few years later, you are working for the Friendship Mutual Insurance Agency run by Barry Gordy's mother, Bertha, and her son, Barry's trying to start this record label. And she kind of...
But he wasn't trying to start a record label at that time. He was working for Ford Motor Car Company. He was a songwriter, but I did not know him for years later. When I started working for Mrs. Gordy, it was because she was the head of this insurance company, and we met her coming to our homes trying to sell my father health insurance and life insurance for the family. And she told my mother and father that she had a large family, as we did, and that's the way we all got acquainted. And then when school was out in the summer, I took a job working for her during the summer. And she taught me insurance. And she would say to me, I have a son. I didn't even know his name. She never called his name to me. And one day, he's going to be a big person in music. And that's all she said. And there were no record companies in Detroit. There were some theaters that had big bands coming through and doing shows for a week at a time, like the Apollo Theater. And that was all we knew, but we hadn't gone. So we didn't really know what people did on stage. And we really didn't listen to jazz or blues or rock and roll music. We only listened to country music and gospel music. So we were really kind of foreign to all of that. But my brother Willie, he was interested in every kind of music. And when he would be in school, he would sneak and listen and sing other songs, popular songs. We had a neighbor across the street from us called the Stubbs family. And their oldest son was Levi Stubbs. Well, my brother Willie and Levi became very, very good friends. And there were big bands coming almost downtown Detroit once a week. They would be there a week at a time. And people were going to the shows, and Levi found out that there was an amateur night every week, and whoever won the amateur program would receive a gift. So he and Willie decided they were going to go on and get, this was called the Paradise Theater, they were going to go and get on this amateur show. And Mrs. Phillips knew that Levi was going, but my family had no idea, nobody but me knew that Willie was going. So I would put him out my bedroom window so he could join Levi, go to the audition, come back home before my father, get home from work. I put him back through the window, and he'd jump in the bed. But Mrs. Stirrups, being a morning coffee person, coming to our house to have coffee every morning with my mother and father, and talking about their children, because the Stirrups family was a large family also. So finally, Willie and Levi kept winning first place, and nobody else could win. So they decided, the people at the theater, that they would not let the two of them come on together anymore. One could come on one week, and the other could come on the other week. But each one would win first place each time. Mrs. Stubbs came to our house the next morning for breakfast and coffee, and she didn't know that my parents didn't know that Willie was going out of the house. So she said to my mother and father, "Isn't it wonderful what my children, our sons, are doing?" And my father said, "Doing what?" She said, "They win every time they go on stage. They win first place. Nobody else can't seem to win if they go on the show." My father said, not Edward. My brother's middle name is Edward. "Not Edward. My children are here at home in bed." And she knew then she had said something that my father and mother didn't know about. Well, my father called all of us children into the kitchen and asked, "What do you know about this?" Well, nobody knew but me and Willie. And my father said, "Well, since nobody knows anything, I'll punish all of you."
Oh, no.
So then Willie and I looked at each other and said, "Well, we better tell the truth." I said, "I know Willie has been going." I said, "And I knew he was winning first place." And my father said, "How did he get out of here without your mother knowing it?" And Will and I both said at the same time, "Well, I let my window up, and he gets out through my bedroom window." And my father said, "Well, we'll settle this when Mr. Stubbs leaves." So Mrs. Stubbs said, "Mr. John, I didn't mean to cause any confusion, but our two sons are very challenging. And I think we need to sit them down, find out what it is they really want to do, and we should just support them in it. Go and see what they're doing. You might like it." So my father, after he talked to us, he decided he would go and he would see what Willie was doing. And of course, Willie was singing songs my father had never heard in our house sing. And now, my mother told me, as a girl, her heart was always for the blues. She loved gospel, but she loved the blues. But her parents wouldn't allow her to sing the blues. So she decided when she got grown, she was going to sing the blues if she chose to. So they went to watch my brother perform. Dizzy Gillespie was the big band that was there that week. And my father and mother met them and invited them to come to our home so that they could have a talk and find out about all of this my brother wanted to do. So my mother prepared a huge meal like it was a feast. And they came and sat around the table. And Dizzy said to my father, "This might be what he was born to do." He said, "Well, my children have a group singing together." He said, "But have you ever asked them if this is what they want to do for life or a living. So he said, no, because everybody in my family sings, and we all have a job. So when they finished talking and eating, they left on good terms, but my father did not say Willie could go into show business. Later on, he asked Willie what he really wanted to do in life. And he said, I don't want to do anything but sing. Well, after that time, my father worked for the Chrysler Corporation, Dodge, Maine, in Hamtramck, Michigan, about 3 miles out of Detroit. And my father said, well, if this is what you're going to do, we'll have to all learn the business, because you can't go into something and you don't know what you're getting into. And that's what happened until Willie was 21. My father traveled with him. And it was much after that time, after Willie got married, I was coaching choirs all over the state of Michigan for the church that I belonged to. And every city and church had their own choir. And I was a music coach. And I met a man. By this time now, I'm grown. I met a man in the barber shop, sitting in the chair of a friend of mine that I was dating. And this young man was named Barry Gordy. And my friend introduced me to Barry Gordy and said to me, instead of you running all over town coaching these choirs for nothing, you should let Barry Gordy coach you and get you ready for show business. And Barry became my coach. Now, I already knew his mother. I didn't know that was his mother. She didn't know I had met her son. And we showed up, all three of us, at her house one day I was going in to rehearse. And Barry said to his mother, hello, Mom. And she said, hi, Barry. And I said, hello, Mrs. Gordy. And he said, do you know my mother? And she said, do you know my son? And that's how the three of us found out.
It's an amazing story. That's a fantastic story. And, of course, Levi Stubbs ended up in the Four Tops. I wonder what would have happened if your brother and Levi Stubbs had stayed together and formed a group. That would have been quite a powerhouse, really.
Well, it would have. But, you know, they both had ideas of their own of how they wanted to do their career.
Hmm.
And both of them did their career as long as they were alive and well.
Yeah, that would have been double dynamite right there. So,
it would have been.
Yes, yeah,
it would have been, and they remained friends.
So you made a bunch of records for Talma, for Barry Gordy's label. You were, like we said, you were the first woman signed there. And after your career at Motown was over, you signed with Stax down in Memphis, I think in 1966, around a totally different sound, you know, and I'm sure just culturally everything about it. Tell me the difference between recording in Detroit and recording down in Memphis with the Stax people.
When you're working with the Motown people, he had people that coached you, wrote the songs and produced the songs and told you how they wanted them sang. They prepared all the music, and you really had no hand in that, not really, not going in, not from the beginning. When I got to Stax, the first thing they said to me, and I was brought to Stax, that deal was made by my manager, Lucky Cordell, in Detroit, in Chicago, and a young man that I had met while I was at Motown, that was in college, but a disc jockey in Nashville, and that was Mr. Al Bell that became vice president and finally president of the Stax record label. I met him at a radio station, and he was still in college. I was in Nashville doing a show promoting the first record that I had done at Motown. Who wouldn't love a man like that? That was written by Barry Gordy for me. And years later, after I had left Motown, and my manager, Lucky Cordell in Chicago, was looking for a label for me, he and Al Bell became friends because they were both disc jockeys, and signed me to Stax Records. And then I was assigned Isaac Hayes and David Porter as my producers. Well, when I got there, they didn't have any songs for me. They didn't know me. So I was waiting on them to show me what they had, because that's what Motown did. And they asked me, what did you bring with you? And I said, nothing, because I thought you all were going to handle all of that. They said, well, at Shaq's, we're a family, and we do it together. So since they didn't have anything for me, I said to them, I have a story I would like to tell. And it's about a man that mistreated me. And that's how the song was born, Your Good Thing's About to Come to an End. I asked Isaac if he would just play anything on the piano. And I talked the story out to David Porter, and he would write as I talked. And then it became the song and became a trademark for me and a gold record.
Yeah, big hit song.
It continues to sell.
Yeah, big hit. Pardon? And a song that a lot of folks have covered, too. It's almost a standard, really, a soul music standard. And I think number 6 on the R&B chart, yeah, it was a huge hit. What a great way to start. And those guys were amazing songwriters. So at Motown up there, everything was written down. And in Memphis, it seems like it was a little more relaxed, and it was a little more of a family. Did you really get that family feeling?
At Shaq's, everything that I did, we all did together. The musicians were there. And we would tell them what we wanted, and we would sing it. And Isaac Hayes or Booker T and the MGs and Steve Cropper, they were just all, and Al Jackson, they would all listen, and then we would find the right groove that we wanted. And that's how we recorded everything there.
So there's a whole bunch of great records you make at Stax, Man's Too Busy and Love Tornado and Stay Out of the Kitchen, and some of them we've heard this morning, Wait You Dog. There's just all these terrific records, and they all have a great kind of that 60s soul thing going on. And like you said, you wrote some and co-wrote some, Abel Mabel. I want to remind folks, by the way, we're talking to Mabel John here. Folks can check joininjesus.org/MabelJohn/music for information about you. And the big news is that you're going to be doing a live performance at the Ponderosa Stomp in New Orleans October 2nd. Folks can get information at ponderosastomp.com, but it's a fantastic bill. And you don't play too many gigs too often, but here you are going to be back in the state you were born in Louisiana, October 2nd. Are you excited for that gig?
I'm excited for two things. We're coming up on the anniversary of Katrina. And the day that Katrina hit, 10 years ago, Dr. Ira called me and had booked me to come to New Orleans to do a performance. When Katrina hit, he had to cancel everything. You know, the whole city was underwater. And I promised him that whenever he decided, I will still make good on the contract that we had together. So I am making good on a contract October 2nd. And he is a wonderful person, I believe. I have never met him personally, but we do a lot of conversations on the phone. And I'm looking forward to that performance. And I think I'm doing a music symposium October 1st. I'll get there. September 30th, which is a Wednesday, and that Thursday, I'll do a symposium, music symposium. And on the 2nd, I perform. And on the 3rd, I come back home.
Well, I'm going to be there. I can't wait to see it. And yes, the Ponderosa Stomp is something really special. It's a lot of one-of-a-kind, one-time-only performances and interviews and things like that. And I'm just really looking forward to it. You don't get to see Mabel John too much. So it's a rare time, and I urge folks to check out PonderosaStomp.com for information. So after the Stax years was over, you ended up joining the Raylettes, Ray Charles's background group, and you had known Ray from touring with him earlier and stuff. 1968, tell me, I mean, what was that like? I mean, Ray Charles, such a genius. What a life
well,
that was.
One thing, he told me, I'm not hiring you to sing background. I need a director for the Raylettes. I want someone that has experience and that knows the business, can handle everything that pertains to the Raelettes. And you will be my lead singer. So I was a lead singer for the Raelettes and Ray Charles. And if you listen to all of the stuff that the Raelettes, that my group of Raelettes did, and you hear me on there, I always sang the same part that Ray Charles sang because I was singing lead. And then I had the opportunity to sing all of my sax songs. I would take the Raelettes on stage ahead of Ray Charles, and we would do our own show in front of Ray and then come back on with Ray. So it was a wonderful learning tree. It was a beautiful experience. I have no bad experiences with Ray Charles and that organization. I have never worked for or sang background for anyone but Ray Charles because I was always a single artist. But it's an experience that I will never forget, and we had a wonderful, wonderful working relationship. He was a fantastic businessman, and that's the one thing I will always respect him for.
So, 1973, you pretty much leave the world of secular music, and you began working, managing Christian and gospel acts, and sometimes still singing, but you started a charity in Los Angeles to feed the homeless that I think is still very busy and still very vital. You earned your doctorate, which is why you are Dr. Mabel John, and you seem like a very motivated, busy lady. You're not retired by any means, I think.
No, I always tell people I'm retired, but I'm a working retired person. But I do what I love and what my heart says. I put God first. If he tells me to stop, then I would stop. But I haven't seen anywhere where God told me to go and take a seat and do nothing. Because I think the happiest people in the world are the busy people.
Yeah, well, certainly your life seems to be very blessed and seems like you've made a lot of right decisions. And yeah, you're still going strong, almost 85 years old, and it's amazing. You've got a show, as we talked about, Friday, October 2nd at the Ponderosa Stomp in New Orleans. It's two nights and lots of great performers on those bills. And folks should check out information at ponderosastomp.com or check out Mabel John's website, joininjesus.org/MabelJohn/music. But you can get information there about her charity work and about her music and career and everything that's going on. I want to end this up by hearing your good thing is about
to... Excuse me, may I give you my email address? Because people can email me. And I'll email them back.
Sure, if you want to.
They can get information. And you email me at Dr. Mabel. It's D-R, all lowercase, no period, M-A-B-L-E, at AOL.com. Dr. Mabel at AOL.com.
Great, I'm
and
sure.
You spell Mabel, M-A-B-L-E, like my song, Abel Mabel.
I'm sure you're going to get.
That's how that song came about.
I'm sure you're going to get some emails. That's very kind of you to reach out to folks. Let's end this by hearing your good thing is about to end. As you said, written by Isaac Hayes and David Porter, and on the Stax label, fantastic record.
Well, it was written all three of us.
Yeah, it sounds like you helped
sometimes,
out in there.
Sometimes it was my story that I told. Sometimes the right credits are not always put on a record. But I told them that story, and we put that together.
So let's. I hate to wrap this up, but we've got to. Your good thing is about to end. Fantastic, fantastic recording, and this was all live, recorded in just a few. Is it? Do you remember how many takes you had to do to get this one?
Not really. It was all live with the band and everything at the same time. We hadn't gone to all of the kind of animated stuff that we do now. The band. We were all in there together.
Yeah. Well, it's a fantastic
remember,
song.
Remember, this was 1966.
Yeah. Well, we will see you October 2nd, and I'm sure you're going to sing this song live for everybody. Folks can check out ponderosastomp.com for information. Mabel John, it's been an absolute pleasure. What fun this has been. Really some great stories and some stuff I didn't know, and really, you're an interesting lady, and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
you to hold me, 'cause somebody else will. You don't have to love me when I want it, 'cause somebody else will. Is about to come to an end. Your real good thing is about to come to an end. All those nights I watched the four walls, I did not have to watch them all alone. Other men said they wanted me, I didn't have to tell them I was your very own. You had all the love I've got. Even ice melts to water and get hot. Look out, your good thing is about to come to an end. About to end. Getting myself back together is gonna be a big problem, I know. But when the right man say he wants me, you can bet I won't say no. Is about to end. Your good thing, your good thing, baby, your good thing is about to come to me. I'll be done. Run out on me. I'm running out of strength to fight. I'm running out of lonely nights. I'm running out of cloudy days and always feeling blue. I'm running out of crying in vain and running out of hurt and pain. And one all day before you count to two. I'll be done. Run out on you.
Take two.